Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to the latest episode of In With The Old. We're the video podcast focused on dispelling myths, building appreciation for God's Word, and helping us all rediscover the Old Testament for the life of faith. Today we are in episode 7 in the book of Habakkuk. We're finishing out chapter 2. So the end is in sight. We've moved from kind of the key note of the book to today we're hitting, we can say, the second major thesis of the book, major point of God is in his holy temple. It's going to be a great time. Joining me through this process, as always, is Dr. Tim Howe. Dr. Tim, how's it going? Looking back at our previous episodes, what has been your favorite episode so far in this series?
You know, Brian, I think our introductory episode where we just laid out some of the main themes, I hope that one is going to be helpful to just reintroduce Habakkuk to some people. Because, Brian, I know you agree with me here, but the message of Habakkuk is so relevant. We're going to look at that in the woes today. Yeah. But just the permission again that God grants to us to ask these big questions is so crucial. So that was probably my favorite one. Of course, I've enjoyed all of them, and I'm looking forward to the one today.
Excellent. Yeah, that was a good one. That's probably my favorite one so far as well. Stands as a good kind of like introduction to the book. And so listeners, I hope it's been helpful for you as well. So today we're finishing off chapter 2, which means we're doing verses 6 through 20. This is often, and maybe in your Bible it has a subheader, as the woe oracles. You're going to hear the word woe repeated at least 5 times. It's 5 key times through this passage. So as always, I'm going to read it from the Christian Standard Bible, and then we're going to go verse by verse working through it. So reading from Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 6 through 20. Won't all of these take up a taunt against him with mockery and riddles about him? They will say, woe to him who amasses what is not his. How much longer? And loads himself with goods taken in pledge. Won't your creditors suddenly arise and those who disturb you wake up? Then you will become spoil for them. Since you have plundered many nations, all the peoples who remain will plunder you. Because of human bloodshed and violence against lands, cities, and all who live in them. Woe to him who dishonestly makes wealth for his house, to place his nest on high to escape the grasp of disaster. You have planned shame for your house by wiping out many peoples and sinning against your own self. For the stones will cry out from the wall, and the rafters will answer them from the woodwork. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and founds a town with injustice. Is it not from the Lord of armies that the peoples labor only to fuel the fire, and countries exhaust themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord's glory as the water covers the sea. Woe to him who gives his neighbors drink, pouring out your wrath, and even making them drunk in order to look at their nakedness. You will be filled with disgrace instead of glory. You also drink and expose your uncircumcision. The cup in the Lord's right hand will come around to you, and utter disgrace will cover your glory. For your violence against Lebanon will overwhelm you. The destruction of animals will terrify you because of your human bloodshed and violence against lands, cities, and all who live in them. What use is a carved idol after its craftsman carves it? It is only a cast image, a teacher of lies. For the one who crafts its shape trusts in it and makes worthless idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, wake up, or to mute stone, come alive. Can it teach? Look, it may be planted with gold and silver, yet there's no breath in it at all. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let the whole earth be silent in his presence. So going on from last week, this is God talking, and this is the extended dialogue, the extended reply, we can say. Last time in verses 2 through 5, we saw the preamble, write down this vision. Now we get a long-running set of woes, hoi oracles, woe oracles, right? These are cries of impending doom and judgment. So, Tim, that was kind of a long section. There's a lot of interesting images, ideas flowing through there. Just big picture before we get into the details, what jumps out at you in reading through all of these woes?
Yeah. So our big idea for this section is that ultimately God is going to deal with sin, and not just sin on the outside. This is the sin of Israel, the sin of the nations. God is just, and God will come and make recompense for sin. So we tend to focus on short-term issues. We tend to focus on what's happening now in this moment. But right after we talked about last episode, God asks us to wait. Eventually, judgment is going to come. So that's the big picture idea of these woe oracles. And Brian, maybe let's just talk about this. You mentioned it. Basically, I'm going to pose the question to you. What is a woe oracle? And maybe you can just walk us through a broad theme of the five woe oracles that we see here in Habakkuk 2.
Yeah, the word woe in Hebrew is hoy. It's a cry, an utterance, right? Look out. It's impending calamity. And so in the speech, God five times says woe, and then talks about the conditions, right? Here's the person, woe to this type of person, and here's the consequence. On a cursory glance, I think most of us pick this up, he's talking to the Chaldeans. And this is significant. This whole book started with Habakkuk complaining about the sin of Israel. God replies, oh, I'm dealing with it. I'm sending the Chaldeans. Habakkuk then replies to the reply saying, but they're guilty too. And the question is, well, is that fair? Here God answers it. Sin is sin, and he is a just God. Sin within Israel, sin without Israel, it will all be dealt with. So going through this, we see if the Chaldeans are this nation that takes people, does violence against, what's the repeated phrase, lands, cities, and the people within them. Well, woe to them. They will face judgment for their sins, right? And so there's some comfort maybe to Habakkuk and the people in that. But then there's more to it than that. Because on the macro level, this is clearly talking about an invading nation. And yet at the micro level, those who take advantage of their neighbors, who make them drink in order to expose their nakedness, those who plunder, those who do all these sins, ooh, that kind of looks a little bit like Israel that Habakkuk was complaining about in the first chapter. And I think that's the point. This is an all-encompassing approach. God is just, and woe to you who fall afoul of that. Yes, specifically the Chaldeans, but Israel needs to take note of it as well, right? God is a just God, which is going to be a key theme, and kind of maybe last time was the major point of the book. Here's the second major point of the book, that God is a just God, and there's something that we really need to draw into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that, Brian, because it resonates so much with other passages we see in the Old Testament, the New Testament as well. You know, I think of Isaiah. When Isaiah sees God in the throne room vision, Isaiah 6, what does he say? He says, woe to me, because I'm a man of unclean lips and I live among a people of unclean lips. So Isaiah recognizes that he, even as a prophet, and the people of Israel are before God guilty. They are totally unworthy of being in the presence of God. I think similarly of the book of Amos, right? Where the book of Amos begins with these oracles of judgment against the nations. But what happens? Eventually it comes back around where? Right to Israel. And I think this even helps us understand Jesus when he uses woe oracles in the New Testament. He says, woe to you Pharisees. And he goes through and he essentially shows the hypocrisy. And so I think rhetorically, as we look at these woe oracles, Brian, you're exactly right. We see judgment against the nations that is obvious to Israel, but then God brings the bullseye back around, as it were, to Israel and says, hey, by the way, you are guilty of these same kinds of things. And because you had a greater awareness than these nations, if I'm truly going to judge justly, I have to judge you based on the knowledge that you have. And I agree with you, Brian, especially I look at verse 15, and I'd be interested in your take on this. But when it uses the language of woe to him who gives his neighbors drink, pouring out wrath, even making them drunk in order to look at their nakedness, God obviously judges that. He says, you're filled with disgrace, and it's going to expose your uncircumcision. I really take both the neighbor language, because that language is common in Deuteronomy and in the Pentateuch as a whole, as well as the reference to uncircumcision. I think to me, that's kind of a snap point where God essentially says, hey, you really can't look at the nations and act like somehow you're more moral than them. And I come back to in my own mind, what God says at the end of Second Chronicles, at the end of Second Kings, in different places, where God's evaluation of Israel is that essentially they've fallen so far away that they are worse than the nations that possess the land before them. So we see here an indictment of the nations. We see an indictment of Israel. And in that, we see the justice of God on display. That's at least, I think that's a through line here. But Brian, maybe walk us through. Walk us through some of the oracles in a little more detail and what you see maybe in each one.
Sure. So the five woe oracles, as I was reading it, I'm sure you heard the term woe repeated. Woe one is verses 6-8. And it's a woe because they have looted and plundered the nations. They too will now be plundered. And so if we're talking about through lines, Tim, justice and retrospectively that Israel's may be guilty of these things is one through line. Another through line is that God likes poetic justice, that punishment tends to fit the crime. And we see that with each of these oracles. Here we specifically see, right, you plundered the nations, you in turn will be plundered by the nations. The punishment fits your crime. Woe 2 is verses 9-11. And we can summarize it as because they have harmed others, and maybe more importantly, assumed no one would know, right? You have plotted shameful things in your house where houses at that time, right? That's your private place. That's not public life. No one will know what we're doing. No, God says, your sin will be exposed. You will be seen. Woe 3 is verses 12-14. Because they, and here it seems very much focused on the Chaldeans, because they thought themselves to be God, God himself will show that he is God, right? The glory of God's majesty and power will fill the earth, and all their kingdom will amount for nothing more than a little bit more tinder for the fire. It's a pretty powerful image, especially right in an Old Testament where hellfire and brimstone of hell is not an image we find in many places. Here's kind of an interesting burning at the end of the world image. One of the first places we get that in the Bible, actually. Woe 4, just kind of summarizing all of them real quick, is verses 15-17. Because they have abused and humiliated others, they will now be humiliated. And there's covenantal language, Tim. We can circle back on this as well with uncircumcision. I think most definitely a play. And then finally, woe 5, because they have called out to idols, God will call them to be silent, right? Ooh. You will lose your voice to be able to talk. And we can drill, there's a lot more to drill in there, but that's the fifth woe, as it were. So in each one of them, there's this kind of sense of poetic justice and judgment for their sins. And Tim, I think one of the things that always strikes me about this list is how comprehensive it is, touching on a lot of different aspects of life, touching on not just the macro affairs of nations. Of course, you plundered and attacked, right? Everyone knows about that. But you plotted shameful things in secret, and God is calling it to the mat. I think this is a beautiful answer to Habakkuk. Don't you see, right? And God's like, oh, I saw it all. And I will judge it all, right? There's nothing being left off the table here. Anyway, I always like that kind of callback. This is the full and final answer to Habakkuk, as it were. So that's real quickly the kind of five woes. Tim, where do we want to zero in on? Maybe what are some of the observations you have or questions that you think our listeners would like to hear us dig a little deeper on?
Yeah. That's a good question, Brian. I think it'd be good to focus on maybe woe 4 here in a moment and look at some of this language. And the reason I say that is I think in a sense that resonates even more deeply, especially with some of the sexual issues involved with it. So maybe we could spend some time there, but let me, before we do that, maybe make a comment or two about some echoes and resonances that I see here. The first is, I love what you said about the poetic justice of God, because what comes to my mind here is God will not be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. And Jesus even saying, the one who lives by the sword dies by the sword. Or even Paul, as we talked about, you know, the idea of some schemes being private in nature, but they're being exposed. Paul says to Timothy, he says, some sins are obvious and they will go before, others are hidden and they'll follow them to judgment. So I just, as we read Habakkuk, it's obvious that Paul knew this text really well. He quotes it multiple times. And it's obvious that Habakkuk really follows the rhetoric and really the mandate of the prophets. And so I just want our listeners to see, when we read the New Testament, we can't really understand it fully. We're not going to appreciate it unless we understand the thought world of those New Testament writers was saturated in these texts. In other words, if you want to understand the New Testament, you have to understand what's going on in these texts. And so I just wanted to mention that. But Brian, maybe we can hone in on the fourth woe, and I might offer a couple of comments about it and then kick it over to you. So in verse 15, it says, "Woe to him who gives his neighbors drink, pouring out your wrath and even making them drunk in order to look at their nakedness." Notice the language of neighbors. I mentioned that earlier. And we see, especially in the law, we see the language of neighbors, we see the language of brothers. It's basically a reminder, it's a trigger to say, if they are my neighbor, that means I have a responsibility toward them, okay? And so here we see the tragedy of someone for whom we should have love, affection, a sense of protection, and instead, what do we have here? Exploitation, right? I'm getting you drunk so that I can look at your nakedness. This is, in a sense, premeditated. And it, just as I was reading through this, Brian, it hit me that sometimes we tend to think of certain issues, sexual issues, some of the problems that we face as modern issues. And to be sure, we live in a sex-saturated world that they would not have even, I truly believe, they wouldn't have been able to comprehend. But even so, when we see some of this, when we see some of these happen, these things happen and described in the Bible, we also need to remind ourselves these things have been happening from the beginning. And the Old Testament especially is no stranger to sexual exploitation. And what does God say? You will be filled with disgrace instead of glory. You also drink and expose your uncircumcision. The cup in the Lord's right hand will come around to you, and utter disgrace will cover your glory. Brian, my wife likes to use the phrase sovereign karma. And I think that's exactly what we see here. There's some sovereign karma coming around. Why? Because God is the God who does protect the vulnerable. And this is the connection point that you drew. Habakkuk, in the first few verses, he comes out swinging, and God comes out swinging right back. He says, Habakkuk, you only see what you see. I see it all. I see it all in vivid detail. I'm the only one who knows the true depth of sin, and I am here to tell you, judgment is coming. I am, you know, sharpening my sword, as it were, and I will come to bring judgment. And when we think about this, I think it's particularly helpful for those who have been exploited, for those who have been oppressed. We see this, by the way, when it comes to bloodshed and the other woes, when it sees, exploitation, you've made yourself rich, you've tried to, you know, escape disaster. There's always this sense in the prophets that especially leaders and especially those who think they can insulate or protect themselves or get away with these things, they just have a feeling of being untouchable. And in these oracles, especially in the fourth one, you just have that idea blown out of the water. God says, not only are you not untouchable, but the very things that you've done are going to come back on your own head. So I just wanted to point that one out. But Brian, maybe what do you see about the fourth woe oracle? And then anything else that you see, anything else that just catches your eye with these?
Yeah, the fourth oracle really catches the eye, especially if we're proceeding under the assumption that these are just focused at the Babylonians, right? The Chaldeans, because the fourth oracle is steeped in covenantal language. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple implications we can take for that. One of them, which is quite interesting, is covenantal standards almost seem to be being applied to a foreign nation, if this at all talks to the Babylonians, mm-hmm. or God has switched and he's talking just to the Israelites. That's beyond the bounds maybe of this podcast, but there's something interesting there. And what we see, Tim, I think you're right to talk about exploitation, because this woe is focused on the antithesis of the covenant. Jesus summarizes the entire Old Testament law as love God and love your neighbor as yourself, right? And I think he's pretty good at summarizing law. He wrote it, or rather he gave it in the first place. So I think we'll trust him. What we see in Oracle 4 is the reversal, not seeking the best of your neighbor, not seeking love for your neighbor, not seeking the good of your neighbor, seeking to shame your neighbor. Nakedness in the ancient world, especially in the biblical world, is a thing that is shameful, right? It's a thing that should be hidden. Tim, I think there's only one passage in the entire Bible, or at least the Old Testament, we'll limit it to that, where nakedness is a good thing and not shameful. It's Genesis 2. It's pre-fall. But post that, right, it's a thing of shame. Here we see woe to those who are going after, right, to abuse, to exploit, to pour out your wrath on your neighbor. Mm-hmm. And God uses some, to me, this is a book of blunt language. Here's some blunt language. You're uncircumcised. And that's not just like a physical, like, oh, look at you. Think of what circumcision stands for, listeners. You are not in the covenant. Mm-hmm. Whether or not, right, you have physically done an act, you do not belong to me. I can't think of a more terrifying statement for God to say. Expose that you are not one of mine. Like, that's going to stay with you. That is a terrifying judgment. And so God's, right, the cup in God's right hand, the cup of wrath will come around to you and be poured out upon you. So it's an important, and I think, Tim, you're right to point out this can be a comforting truth if we have felt like we're the victims, if we're the ones whose nakedness have been exposed, figuratively, literally, however you want to say that, right? Justice is done, and God has very strong things to say about bringing about justice in this way. So it's kind of like my thoughts on Woe 4.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and Brian, I want to maybe dovetail then into Woe 5 for just a minute, because I think it's helpful, as you described, Jesus summarized the law, right? Love God, love your neighbor. And what we see in the last two woes is basically the exploitation of the neighbor in Woe 4, and then the denial of God in Woe 5. In other words, this is all-encompassing. This is a total rejection of God's desires and designs. And in Woe 5, it's about idolatry, right? And this has resonances. Yeah. You maybe think of immediately like Isaiah 40 through 49. I mean, these kinds of passages where God speaking to the nations as well as to Israel says, your idolatry is absolutely foolish. And God really, in a sense, mocks. He says, woe to him who says to wood, wake up, or to mute stone, come alive. Can it teach? Look, it may be plated with gold and silver, yet there's no breath in it at all. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let the whole earth be silent in his presence. And what is this? This is a challenge to the readers to say, okay, am I trusting in the Lord? Going back to what God said, the righteous shall live by its faith or its faithfulness. Am I trusting the Lord? Am I trusting enough to obey when he tells me to act? Am I trusting enough to rest in the goodness of his plans? Idols always fail to deliver. God wants us to demonstrate our love for him by our love for others. He wants us to demonstrate our love for him by an exclusive love that doesn't look for answers, for peace, for protection in other ways. And so I think that just dynamic between Woe 4 and Woe 5 is helpful as a summary of God's expectations in the law. But Brian, maybe give us some final thoughts here on Woe 5 or any of the others, and bring us on home.
Yeah, no, you said it really well. Woe 5 is going at the fundamental thing here, right? That humanity, if it doesn't worship God, will make gods for itself. But what good do they do? I like how the CSB puts it. Can it, right, the idols, can it teach? Because God can teach. He has a law. And there's implied in that, right, a question. Have you studied it? Have you listened? You come to me with questions, but have you heard what I have said, right? Can these things teach? These idols were made in the ancient world, Tim, right? Because people wanted to commune with the gods. They wanted some way to reach the divine. And here we see those thrown away. No, those don't do anything. Those don't help you. What does help you? God is in his temple. God is on the throne. That throne, by the way, the footstool of that throne is in the temple itself, right? It's the Ark of the Covenant. And so there's this kind of challenge question. Have you heard who God says? Do you know who God is? A God that is transcendently sovereign. I like that phrase as a description of God's being presented here. Let all the earth be silent before him. All people owe allegiance to him. We can trust him. There's no one else above him, no one else beside him, no one else that can gainsay his word, right? We should fear him and we must worship him. There's a lot of really important theological truths that I think flow out of this this idea that God is in his holy temple. The passage that comes to my mind, Tim, you brought up Isaiah. That came to my mind as well, but also the Psalms. Be still and know that I am God. That be still is not like meditating, not like humming. It's literally stop fighting. Be still and know that I am God, right? And we see that word here. And listeners, I do find it quite fascinating that God does tell the prophet, shut up. You need to be quiet and you need to listen. But it comes in Habakkuk 2:20, not Habakkuk 1:1. God let the prophet really go. He let him challenge. He let him ask questions. And God has answered. God has worked through things. And he has eventually reached the point where he says, be still, be quiet, know that I am God. Not because he's shutting down debate, not because he's shutting down questions, because we've reached the point where Habakkuk either trusts or doesn't. No more words are needed here. You have what you need to know. What will you do with it?
Yeah.
I always love that this is so deep into the book, right? Be still and know that I am God. I think that helps us in the midst of difficulty of suffering. It helps us trust and remember that we aren't God. We don't have the perspective to understand everything, and that God's perspective is always much sharper, much more integral, and much more far-seeing than our perspectives are. We tend to be very short-sighted. We tend to be very shallow when we deal with issues. And throughout this book, God has been showing, no, I have a much greater care and a much greater plan than you often expect that I do. The Chaldeans will be judged. The Israelites will be judged. You will live, God says to his people, because I have said so. Habakkuk 2:4, right? So now is the time to be quiet. Now is the time to reflect. Do we trust? And that's where this book is going to go. This is the end of the debate between Habakkuk and God. In chapter 3, we're going to get a poem. And that poem is the prophet reflecting on this, be silent. Having spent some time thinking about it, he comes to some theological conclusions. And we're going to look at that next time. So Dr. Tim, thank you for going through the Woe Oracles with me. Listeners, we hope this has been helpful and interesting to you. Please reach out to us if you have questions. Leave a comment on this video. We love to engage with our listeners, help you understand the Old Testament. That's our passion. Hope you'll join us next time for a really great episode on Chapter 3. And until then, stay cool and stay old.